Thanks for downloading the Across the Divide podcast, an exclusive Boston Globe podcast focusing on people of color.
This podcast is brought to you by Bob Stores, the original casual clothing and footwear superstore. Real brands, great prices. For the store nearest you, visit Bob's website at www.bobstores.com.
Welcome to the third edition of Across the Divide for the week of December 16th. I'm Russell Contreras in Boston with a selection of story highlights on people of color around New England. This week...
You are characterizing each student by reason of the color of his or her skin. That is quite a different means, and it seems to me that that should only be, if ever allowed, allowed as a last resort.
The Supreme Court heard this month two important cases that may change how school districts use race to keep diverse student bodies. The cases stem from school districts in Seattle and Louisville, Kentucky, and justice will soon decide just how far their school boards and others can go to ensure racial mixed schools. The cases are important because two new Bush appointees are on the bench, and those two new justices, John Roberts and Sam Alito, have signaled that they are against any consideration of race in school admissions. If the court rules against the voluntary use of race in K-12 school admissions, the ruling could affect around 20 Massachusetts school districts. Those districts all have some type of program that considers race as one of the many factors in school admissions. Globe's correspondent Kara Feinberg recently wrote about the Lynn School District and their student assignment plan. Feinberg has been following the Louisville and Seattle cases and went to hear oral arguments at the Supreme Court. Before she left, Across the Divide spoke with her about the cases and the Lynn School District's program.
Basically, at this point, we've got four judges where we really do know where they stand on one side and four judges where we know where they stand on the other. What this case is going to hang on is Kennedy's vote. Kennedy, in 2003, which is the Michigan case, which is, I believe he voted against affirmative action. That doesn't mean that that's the same case here. This is not an affirmative action case. But it really means we don't know what he's going to vote. Some really fascinating studies have been done here. Melanie Killen is a professor at the University of Maryland. And she did a fascinating study that was just recently published that looked at two groups of children, one that was an integrated group, children who had gone to an integrated school, and young children who had gone to a mostly segregated school. And these were white children who had been mostly with white children. And she showed them each picture cards with ambiguous situations in them. And it would be maybe a child standing behind a swing and another child on the ground, or maybe a child bending over some money on the ground. And she would ask the children, what happened here? And every time she did it, she'd show different cards and the race of the child would be switched. So what she found was when she showed picture cards to children in both groups where the child behind the swing or the child bending over the money was black, children who had gone to mostly segregated schools more of the time attributed some sort of bad act to the child, whereas children who had gone to integrated schools might come up with alternate explanations.
What about the other side? Is there going to be a sort of a group to counter? We see this in abortion cases. You have the pro-life and the pro-choice sides. Are we going to see the other side too also protesting?
I do know that the other side has written just as many amicus briefs, friend of the court briefs, as supporters, and they are full of arguments just as convincing on the other side about individual rights and lack of evidence that shows that segregation is harmful, doubting some of the research or finding different findings than Gary Orfield or the people in his brief. So it's there.
Now these are people that aren't necessarily anti-integration. Yeah, they're more so saying. The more so we can call them 14th Amendmentist, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And their argument is?
The Supreme Court, when it deals with 14th Amendment cases in regards to race, has two standards that it needs to meet. The first standard is there a compelling interest? Is there a need for this program? And the second is it narrowly tailored? Is this the best way to deal with this program? And people who are against programs like this aren't necessarily anti-integration. What they're saying is these programs
are no longer, some people are saying these programs are no longer necessary in our 21st century world. That's very different from the Brown versus Board world.
I think one of the interesting things that I wasn't able to talk about in the article was people in Lynn, how the program is serving them, what they think about it. One of the things I was not able to address in this article was how the people in Lynn feel about this program. And this is, you know, we're 20 years into this. Basically, one thing that doesn't get addressed very often is this is a rather mild program. This is not compelled busing. This is not you must send your child to this school, you must send them there. Parents have a lot of choice, and they often get their first choice. What happens here is that if a school is too unbalanced in one direction or another, parents have the option to send their children almost anywhere unless there's an imbalance. That's when race comes into play. And that's not all that often. Parents are able to send their child, no matter where they live, to their neighborhood school. So no, there's no denial. Doesn't matter how many children there are there. There's always a seat there. It's if parents want to send them to another district that race can come into play. So there's a variety of feelings, but I think the overall feeling is we're doing something here. We're doing something. And something is better than nothing.
That was Kara Feinberg, Globe correspondent, who went to hear oral arguments at the Supreme Court. This is Across the Divide. Low filmmaker Stephen Croak was once assaulted by two black men while living in Los Angeles. The experience made him noticeably scared of black people, and that bothered him. But instead of merely submitting himself to that fear, he made a film about an interracial love story between a young Irish boy and an African-American girl. They're living in a city surrounded by racial tensions. Alex Reed from Globe Northwest filed this report.
I'm Ruby. What's your name?
Seamus. That's a weird name.
Lowell native Stephen Croak wrote and directed his first feature film titled The Busker. Croak shot his film in Lowell.
It's about a boy whose father is murdered at the beginning of the story, and he plays the violin on the streets for money, and while he's out there, he meets a black girl and he falls in love with her, but he also meets a music instructor from Europe who sees how talented he is. So he has to decide between staying with the girl or going over to school.
Croak explains the unusual title of his film.
I actually had a different title originally, and then I was in Prague in the Czech Republic doing some writing over there, working on the screenplay. Some people over there said, oh, you know, you're writing about buskers. And at the time, I had no idea what that was. And so, you know, I said, what's a busker? He said, it was the street, you know, the street performers. That's what your story. And so that's where that came from.
The story centers around a young street performer and his interracial romance in a city torn by racial tensions. Croak said the plot evolved from two personal experiences.
The very first nugget of the story came as I was backpacking in Belfast over Northern Ireland with a friend of mine. And there was a little boy there. He wanted to have his picture taken with me. And he was about 9-10 years old, and it was during the time when the Troubles were a lot more prevalent than they are now. The soldiers were patrolling the streets. So after we took the picture, he kind of bopped along on his merry way, and it just made me think, how is this boy, 10-year-old young boy, however old he was, who is looking after him, or better yet, not looking after him, while he's out on the streets with all these soldiers and all this stuff going on? That actually changed. I was working at a restaurant in Los Angeles, and two black guys broke into the restaurant and came at us with guns, and they weren't wearing masks. They had my head on the ground with the gun stuck in the back of my head. They stacked us on top of each other, and the whole time I figured at some point we were going to get executed. And then after that happened, I noticed myself came in contact or passerbys were black. I got a really weird feeling, and I had never had a racist bone in my body. I had, my boss was black, I had black friends, but I noticed that I got a really weird feeling, and it was a troubling feeling because I never had that. So again, as a writer, you just stop asking yourself questions. Why why do you feel this way, or what, you know.
Croak grew up in Lowell's Belvedere neighborhood before moving to Los Angeles, where he enrolled in the University of Southern California to study film writing. But to shoot the movie, he returned to the city he knew best.
I grew up in Lowell and lived there my whole life until I moved out west. So when I decided that I was going to try to put the movie together, I knew that I would get all kinds of help and support if I shot it back here, because I still have a lot of friends and a lot of family back here. It wasn't always as, like, the downtown area definitely wasn't always as beautiful as it is now. And I would return at least once a year for Christmas and try to get back for a wedding here and there. And every time I got back, you could know, I was noticeable how the city was progressing and changing for the better.
The Busker was given a premiere showing December 2nd at the Lowell High School Auditorium. Croak said he was delighted by the audience response.
Yeah, the reception's been great. We had a screening the other day, and I was told there were probably 700 or 800 people there at the screening, because we even had people up in the balcony at the auditorium. And one of the first things people say is how beautiful we make Lowell look.
Croak said his next task is to find a distributor for his film. He plans to enter the Busker into several upcoming film festivals.
Yeah, we're going to start trying to get into some of the film festivals and just try to find a distributor. And hopefully, I'm not expecting it to get a big theatrical release, you know, at your local Megaplex. But I would love to be able to get a theatrical release around town, trying to get it out there anywhere we can.
For the Boston Globe, this is Alexander Reed.
I don't want you to go. Everybody just wants us to be a part.
I don't want to go either.
And that's all for today. For other Boston Globe podcasts, please visit boston.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of Across the Divide. For the Boston Globe, this is Russell Contreras. Thanks for joining us.